the gas!
All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers? What the fuck, buddies? What the fucksters? What's happening? I'm Mark Maron. This is my podcast, all right? Is that right with you? Is that the wrong tone to start out with? What day is it? Monday? What's going on? Is that too much for Monday? Today on the show, I talked to Cedric the Entertainer. Sort of a long time coming. I'd run into him here and there and be like, we can do it? Yeah, we can do it. And it was good. It was we got a little chunk of comedy history that revolves around St. Louis that I didn't know, a little sort of perspective on black comedy and when that kind of became a sort of a thing unto itself, and just, you know, kind of hanging out in general. I like Cedric, and it was good to see him. So that's going to happen. Also, let me do these tour dates. I told you about that it was going to happen, but I'm the guy. You're like, Mark, why don't you ever come to like places like Grand Rapids, Michigan, or Milwaukee, Wisconsin, or Providence, Rhode Island, or New Haven, Connecticut? Why has it been so long since you've been to Huntington, New York? Because I wanted to wait until it was the coldest time of the year and possibly fucking snowing, apparently. And why that tone again? Because it's at me. The tone is at me. This has nothing to do with anything any of you have done. I am talking to myself like this. Thursday, January 30th, I'm in Cleveland, Ohio at the Agora Theater. And that should be great if it's not snowing or under an avalanche of coldness. Friday, January 31st, I'll be in Grand Rapids, Michigan at the Fountain Street Church if it's not frozen shut. Saturday, February 1st in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, I'll be at the Turner Hall Ballroom if it's not ice, pure ice. Friday, February 14th, I take a break and go to Orlando, Florida at Hard Rock Live. That makes me nervous. But we'll see what happens. As many of you know, I do not do Florida because I don't think Florida does me. You dig what I'm saying? It's my gut feeling, but we'll see. Maybe I'll bring Dino down there. Tampa, Florida, Saturday, February 15th at the Straz Center. Is that really what it's called? It's not supposed to be Stars Center? Straz. It's a good word, Straz. Is it the Straz family? I don't know what that is. I hope it's right. It's got to be right. Straz, man. Where are you playing in Tampa? The Straz? What is that? Is that slang? No, man. The Straz Center. Thursday, back into the Arctic. February 20th. I'm in Portland, Maine at the State Theater. On February 21st, I'm in Providence, Rhode Island, the Columbus Theater. Many of you know Providence and my relationship. It goes way back to when my car got stolen there. I was playing Periwinkles. And my car got stolen because I left it on the street overnight because I was too drunk to drive home. And I got a ride or something, and it was gone with my bomber jacket, which was sad. So maybe I'll get some closure around that. Maybe I'll find my car. Friday, February 22nd, I'll be in New Haven, Connecticut at College Street Music Hall, which I think I played before. Again, might be frozen. Sunday, February 23rd, Huntington, New York at the Paramount. I enjoy that place. I believe that's where they give you a brick when you perform there. I have a brick from there. Pow! Look out. Just shit my pants. Just coffee.coop. Classic ad read. That was never a read. It was always a riff. Just coffee.coop. Get the WTF blend. I get a little on the back end. Not a fortune. Hardly anything, really. But it's nice. They send me coffee, and I have been dabbling. I have been chipping at the coffee. Pre-sale tickets go on sale Wednesday morning at 10 a.m. where you are. This Wednesday at 10 a.m. where you are for Cleveland, Grand Rapids, Milwaukee, Orlando, Tampa, Portland, Maine, Providence, Rhode Island, New Haven, and Huntington, New York. Pre-sale goes on stage at the venues that I mentioned or WTFpod.com/tour, and you can use the password Buster. That's the artist presale for all those dates. So let's get back to the present. Let's deal with some kind of sad news, but it's not horrible yet. I don't know what to tell you, man. The LaFonda, what do I want to call it? The journey. You know, the other day, man, she was under the bed, and I'm like, I'm going to have to do this tomorrow. But then all of a sudden, she's, you know, hanging out, and I just realized, like, you know, she might not be dying immediately. This might just be the older LaFonda. She's a senior citizen. She's a little confused. She doesn't have the kind of bite that she used to. She's lost her edge completely. She's very fragile. But she's out and about. I mean, right now she spends, I would say, a quarter of the day under the bed, and then another quarter like sleeping on the bed. And then, you know, half the day she's sort of out and about. So it's definitely not time to kill her. And I mean, put her down. Jesus, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. It's not time. But I think I'm in a certain amount of denial. Look, I don't, you know, I think that I can still hike up the mountain every day, and I'm a little beat up, but that's where it's at. I'm just going to wait it out. I kind of thought I would have to do it this week because I have to go out of town for a week, and then I'm back for a week, and I'm out of town again. So I thought, like, let's get this over with before I go, which was, you know, selfish. And so I just want you all to know that I'm not going to put LaFonda down just because I might not be here to do it. Like, I'm not going to do it because I don't want to miss anything, if that makes sense to you. She's definitely ill. I think she might be under the bed right now. But she has been out and about, and she is receiving love, and she is eating, and she's sort of hanging out and kind of looking wistfully out the window, which I project. And I'm like, that she's taking it in. She's just absorbing what she can for her journey. It's like when you know a cat is sick and not doing well, and she was just sitting there looking out the window. I'm like, this is fucking almost too much for me to bear, that she's just sort of like, oh, there's a bird. This might be the last bird. I think it's raining. It's wet. Like, I feel like that she's like, soon this is all going to be over. Me just sitting here looking out the window outside where I can never go. Soon I will fly away. Fly away in the morning. I'll fly away. Yeah, that's what I think she's doing. She's singing the Carter Family version of Fly Away as she looks out the window, knowing that her time ain't long, as they say in the blues song. LaFonda's time ain't long. But she's doing okay right now. Still sad, but I like that she's hanging in. Okay? As some of you know, I was on vacation in Ireland, and I was away at my mother's for a bit. I guess what happened, I didn't quite realize it, like after the special, after I recorded my special at the end of October, I did not do comedy at all since October 30th. I was just sort of like enjoying my life without the stress and panic and compulsion to go perform comedy three nights a week. And then I did it the other night. I got back in, I went in, and it was like it fucking spun me out, dude. But not in a real way. Look, I know I'm professional. I know that this is what I do. I've done it all my life, and I assume it will come back to me. But I was tired of all the material in a way. I hadn't reinvigorated it. I didn't know what I was going to say. And I made the mistake of bringing the director lady with me, and she got to experience that. Where, you know, deep down, I'm like fucking horrified at the fact I haven't done comedy so long. I don't want to talk to him. I don't want to be up there. I don't like the audience. I know it's going to hurt. I know it's going to take time to fucking at least one set to get back on my feet. And, you know, I could have just gone through that myself. But she chose to come with me. So that means I was able to kind of put all that frustration, anger, and a touch of fear and direct it right at her for no reason, which is it's one of the great reasons to be involved with me, is the misdirection of anger. And I realized maybe I don't communicate emotionally that well. I don't, you know, I'm a grown man, but I don't know if I'm a grown up, but I'm trying. The patterns are less. And I think there needs to be an app of some kind, you know, created to translate immature kind of a defensive men's statements, you know, into what they really mean on an emotional level. Like, for instance, when I say something like, you know, fuck you, you don't fucking love me, what that really means is, I love you. When I say something like, you're fucking with my head and I don't appreciate it, you're just worming your way in there, you're manipulating me, you're like fucking up in my shit, that means I feel very close to you right now. Right? Go fuck yourself. Fuck you means please don't leave. Then maybe it should translate to I'm sorry about that. To what that really means is like, I'm a hopeless asshole and a complete emotional fuck up. I should be grateful every day that you have the patience to even be here. That's what I'm sorry means. But also, it's okay if you have to leave and go fuck yourself. See, then you start over again. And then the app has to kind of go back. You know, it's tricky. But if anyone wants to design that app, you should get on it. I just heard Fonda yelping. She's not in pain. She's all right. She gets excited about water. Don't you wish you could? So I go on stage, and the first set, I took a little bit of a hit. It's just a horrible feeling. And I was talking to, who was I talking to? I was just talking to Ben Schwartz about it. It's a weird feeling of embarrassment and shame that just manifests into, you know, self-flagellation and then upsetting the person you're with. Maybe that last part's just me. Anyway, I did three sets on Saturday, and I'm back in it, man. Everything's alive again. Everything's reinvigorated. Don't worry about me. I'm funny. Yeah, you heard it here first. Some guy comes up to me after the show, like, I only know you from your interviews, and I didn't know you did the stand-up. You're funny. I'm like, thank you. Thank you. I've been doing it my entire fucking life. And, you know, just like, why you got to be so dismissive? Translate to, I appreciate you listening to my show, and I'm glad you got to see me do stand-up. Fuck that guy. That means I'm jealous of that person. This would be a very helpful app for a lot of insecure, angry people. That guy's not doing anything original. That means I need to write more. That thing is bullshit. I don't want to fucking do that gig. That means I'm scared. And I just need to overcome my fear. Okay. Anyway, God, maybe I should take a break here. Look, folks. So Cedric's here. And if you didn't know, he is currently on the CBS show The Neighborhood, which airs Monday nights. He's also going to be touring. He's Cedric, man. He's the Cedric the Entertainer. He's out there entertaining. And it was great to see him. Great to talk to him. So this is me talking to Cedric. Cedric, I haven't seen you in a while.
Oh, man. Mark, how are you, brother? This is awesome.
I'm good, man. You know, it's weird. I was trying to remember. I'm pretty sure that, like, my memory is pretty clear. Wasn't the first time we met at the fucking Aspen Comedy Festival? It was that one year, the first year they had like a black showcase.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
It was you, Bernie
Mac.
And I can't remember who else.
It had to be somebody odd, like maybe even like a John Hinton or somebody like that.
I can't.
You know, they'll go black, and then they'll go, okay, let's do...
What, almost black?
Yeah, let's
lighten it up a little.
Yeah, okay, guys, come on. Let's not test the waters too deep there.
But I just remember it was like 95.
Yeah, man.
I think.
Yeah.
And it was to see, you know, in that environment, to see Bernie Mac and you guys up there, it was crazy.
Yeah, and you know, and it's like, and it's in Aspen, it was like the first time doing some stuff like that, you really seeing people like vacation in the cold.
Oh, we're
like, whoa, what's this choice? what's this choice? I'm not understanding, like, so y'all chose to come here.
Yeah.
It's super cold.
And you can't breathe.
Right.
And the audiences are weird.
And he's from Chicago, I'm from St. Louis, so we not, like, we running from winter all times, man. Like,
yeah.
That was not a good look. But,
I just remember the awkwardness of all of it.
Oh, yeah, and then, and the night starts, and it's like they're trying to, you know, this is before they even came up with the term urban, I think. Like,
right.
So nobody knew exactly what to call. Hey, guys, it's our African, are we able to black, do we say?
It's black night
Aspen. Oh, do you just say it right out like that? Just go black.
The really urban wasn't around
yet. Yeah, urban wasn't here yet. We couldn't do it. We couldn't make it politically correct at the moment.
I don't know what that urban thing is. Kind of odd. So you remember when that happened? When it was just urban?
Yeah, it came in because, black people, for one, we make sure not, like, because we go through it. You know, we'll be like, African Americans. Then right. Some people like, I'd just rather be called black. And then it's some people just like, look, I'm American, don't put no color on me.
Oh, really?
So it's that, you
so
know.
So there's conversations like within the community?
Yeah, that happens all the time on what we are actually going to be calling ourselves in the next, you know.
Does it come down to a personal level, or is there a generalized sense of it?
It is a generalized sense. It is like a caucus. Yeah. Like a big sense.
Where
like
are we at now? This.
We're still an African American, but really all the black people just go with black. So on paper, like if you fill out anything, it's going to be African American.
Right.
If you ask a black person, they're going to be like, yeah, I'm black.
So bro. Black's okay.
Yeah, black is fine.
Cool. African American's good. It's a lot. Why is there a lot of.
Yeah. One that's out completely is colored.
No, you know, yeah, of course.
Gone. Been years.
Yeah, it's been a long time. But do people have. Do you know people that have a problem with African American?
Not really. I mean, it is, you know, it is a subculture like, you know, like the extremely woke, if you will. Like people that don't like those, like, kind of, you know, unofficial categories of like, oh, I got to fit in this one group. One, because we got so many people that's like just so multicultural now.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
You know,
yeah,
that
yeah,
the,
yeah.
But the identify of how you look like, to a person would be like, yo, you black.
Though. Right.
You know, so.
And also, like, not all black people are African based.
True. Sourced. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Source. That's cold blooded.
Is it?
Sourced from Africa.
Well, I mean, it is the source where we all come from.
Right. But not,
It's so weird. It's odd to me that, like, in talking about, like, I had this situation just with a guy. When you talk about black stuff with black people and you're not, you know, I'm white, but and then people go like, why you got to bring that up? I'm like, why not?
Yeah.
Well, we're just supposed to pretend like, you know, there's no color lines, there's no gender lines, there's no, and it's like, that's pretend.
And then you get, everybody always ends that with, all we got to do is talk more.
Yeah.
we got to keep these kind of conversations in the atmosphere, guys.
Right. Yeah.
But as soon as you bring it up, don't you ever say that about me.
Well, it's weird because your show, what are we going into, season three?
Season two right now.
Of The Neighborhood.
The Neighborhood, yeah, man.
Well, because that's sort of what that's about.
Yeah.
It's sort of a straight up CBS, you know, three camera deal.
Yeah.
And you got, it's a white guy that moved into a black neighborhood.
Correct.
And and clearly it's before they take it over entirely.
Correct. So it is when
it's a small window.
It's that small window. We're going into like that tail, that small window. Just
you got about another year.
Before the Whole Foods comes. And we like, oh, that's how it starts.
Do you guys talk about that on the show?
What
that's gonna happen?
Yeah.
Oh, you do.
Yeah. We definitely start to build out into it, and we're gonna do it more. We're in season two, and as we build out to the final part of it, we're gonna start to show like
people coming.
This move is starting to happen. It won't be necessarily the white people, but it'll be like the businesses and the idea of how people are really getting ready. You know, what are you gonna do? When do you just complain or do you try to get involved or what do you do?
Well, like, is it wrong, I guess, is the real question.
Well,
because I was part of it, you know, I moved out of Highland Park and I got accused of being a sort of a gentrifier, a colonialist.
Yes.
Whatever you call it. I showed up and they all followed and then I got out because Yeah, exactly. Well, the hipster look, you know, because it got too much for me, you know, but I saw it happen and I've been in neighborhoods where that happens and you do feel attention after a certain point.
Yeah.
But then there are some people who have lived there all their lives and they are of the culture that lived there before the white people came in, who were like, well, it's doing the neighborhood good.
Yeah.
And but then there's the hardcore people that are like, they fucked everything up.
No, it's so true. And I mean, it's hard because people have always these, you know, kind of mythical, beautiful ideas of the neighborhoods that they grew up in.
Right.
But, you know, one, when you know, ideas of services and goods and things are coming, moving in. You want those things.
Yeah.
But, you know, when it's, you know, all cultural or all one race or something to that nature, and it feels like you can't get those same services to come in. But when they start to come and you live there, yes, you want a great grocery store right around the corner. I don't want to move. But now I can't afford to stay here. Like, that's what happens.
Right, and you can't afford the grocery store.
Yeah, exactly.
Ridiculous.
You're like, what? An orange?
$3?
Yeah, I need a
$3
credit. Let me do a little home loan.
Wait, so you come from Missouri?
Yeah, St. Louis. Well, actually, two little spaces. It was, I was all over Missouri.
Really?
Born in Jeff City. My mother was in college at the time. Then Caruthersville, Missouri, which is in the Boot Hill down, it's like in between St. Louis and Memphis that way.
Uh-huh.
And then St. Louis.
I've gotten a little shit for talking shit about Missouri recently.
Uh-oh.
No, I was in St. Louis. I had great shows there. I was nervous to go to Missouri because it is sort of a conservative state.
Very.
An example of, we're going to try to make this a theocracy.
Yeah.
We're going to make everything illegal and make it Jesus Town. But St. Louis, I had a good time there. They're good people. It's a good old city.
Yeah.
What was your experience growing up there? But there's, I mean, well, it's a huge black community in Missouri.
Yeah, you know, it's still one of the most polarized. To your point, though, like Missouri is actually, if you live there, you know, you're kind of used to this energy and you can operate in it, but it's still
Which energy?
The energy of, like, knowing that people want to be, like it's a whole sector of people that want to just break away from the union and just kind of be like, yo, we're, you know, we can do
abortion's
things our way, right? Anything we want to do, it's our way.
Yeah.
You know, very, very, you know.
It's white fundamentalism.
Yeah, fundamentalism, exactly. Strong and bold.
Mm-hmm.
And so you'll see that in the town.
You
and
grew up with it?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's there. St. Louis, of course, in the metropolitan areas, it's not as much because of the density of, you know, the black culture and people. But the city's still very much divided, black and white.
Yeah.
South St. Louis, pretty much white.
Yeah.
North St. Louis, black.
Yeah.
North, the suburbs, same way. You get west, it's more white. You know, again, people are starting to, you know, economically change and mix in.
Yeah.
But it's that.
It's
when
still
you
that.
Go, you see it, you like, it's so obvious that you know, they don't even have to deal with other cultures' issues. It's not a part of their life.
And they accept the segregation, but they champion themselves as being integrated.
Yeah.
You know, we all work in the city. It's just when we leave the city a few miles, we go to our separate place.
Yeah, exactly how, you know, and it's really how a thing like Ferguson happened. You know, was that kind of powder keg of when people don't really work and live in the communities where they work and they just work it.
Yeah.
They just go in there and work it like it's a, you know, like it's an inanimate object.
Yeah.
Like, they don't give a shit. They
may
even go home, you know? So so you treat people like that, and next thing you know, you like you got this huge disconnect that leads to violence.
Yep. And when you, was it always the thing, how many people in your family?
It's just my sister and I.
And your folks? Your folks still around?
My mom has passed. My dad's still around now. They were divorced since I was a kid. So,
oh, really?
Yeah, so it was a single parent household, my mother and my sister.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, my mother, and then my dad lives in Memphis, and he had remarried.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That's a pretty good town, huh?
Yeah, pretty good. I was just there.
Yeah?
Just there, did a show, great.
Yeah?
Hung out, Lakers was there, took my dad to the game. Like, it was dope, man.
So you get along with him?
Yeah. You know, we grew into it. Like,
oh, yeah.
I got about 20, 21 years old, and finally, like, kind of understood relationships.
Well, so it took you that long, though? Were you pissed off at him as a kid?
But
he was always a part of your life,
But
you just were like, fuck
you. Know, yeah, you're doing the rebellious boy thing. Like, you know, man, you don't know shit, man. Fuck off, dude.
But he hung in there?
He did, man. He had the patience of Job. And God bless him for that. When you think about it, like, he just, like, dealt with it, man.
You put your parents through some shit.
Yeah.
And then, like, when you get out on the other side of it and you get a little empathy, you're like, wow.
Yeah, right. Right.
Well, you didn't have to deal with any of that.
When you got, especially like when it comes down to relationships, because, you know, like when you're living with your mom, you kind of, you know, and they explain it, your dad's just a super piece of shit.
Yeah.
Like,
all
right. And she never did that. Like,
right.
No, but, you know.
You assume it.
The inference.
Yeah.
You know, right, she never said it, but she definitely inferred, like, fuck.
Yeah, you know.
So, and so, you know, you get it, and you start to take on those kind of, you know, things. And then
pick a team.
And then you get a grown adult-style relationship yourself and go, like, oh.
People were flawed.
Yeah, let me call my man and say, bro, I get it.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, there's no way I could have fucking took this shit either.
Yeah, it is. Empathy, like, is not always second nature. It's not always right there, especially for parents, because there's no distance. You know?
Yeah.
And then but that's good. So you guys get along now.
Yeah, man. Yeah, that's good. You know.
Your sister, what does she do?
My sister's a professor at Pepperdine.
So right here?
Yeah, right here. She's married. Her husband's the chaplain there. So they got a nice little family.
She married a man of the cloth.
Yeah. He grew into that. He was an educator, like a writer. He did plays and stuff, but he was always an orator. Like, he was a guy that, you know, want to write and say things. And so,
was he man of faith, though?
Yeah. You have to
be a man of faith.
Yeah, he definitely a man of faith, though.
Yeah.
He definitely a solid dude. Like, guys, it's one of them, you know, you're kind of happy when your sister, you know, you're like, all right, yeah, dude's a good dude.
Yeah, it is good. It's good when you get people, your siblings, you know, you don't have to be like, oh, shit.
Yeah, when you get that call, you got to go to, like Sonny and the Godfather. Like,
right.
I'll go bring
out. Fucking. Yeah.
Get set up. Like,
yeah. No, it's always, it's always nice. I've made some bad choices in my life. And, I've been that guy where the weird thing about that shit is no one can say anything.
Yeah.
Like, you know, people, even if they do, they're like, hey, man, we're a little concerned. It's like, what the fuck do you
dude,
know? Mind your own business. This is, I love her.
Okay.
Yeah. And then after it fucking blows up, they're like, we tried to tell you. Did you, though, really?
Yeah, you're all...
Why didn't you stop
there
it?
There were signs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ugh. There's always signs after hindsight.
So what was, did you always want to do the stand-up thing, or were you studying for something else?
I studied something else. You know, I was always like a funny kid, like as a kid, you know, that kind of personality. But my mother was a school teacher, I had to go to college, man. It was, you know, that was just her way, and that's what we did. So, I studied, went to school, got a degree in radio, television, mass communication, minor in theater.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, so Southeast Missouri
State. You knew the area that you wanted to be involved with.
Yeah.
So you did theater in college?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Like, what'd you do?
I mean, you know.
The college stuff?
It was a couple of little, it was a couple of plays, you know. And we never really did any, like, hardcore Shakespeare stuff. So it'd be like, I don't even remember some of the plays. A couple of musicals.
You sing?
Yeah, I sing a bit.
Yeah,
so... Yeah, just try to keep up with the, you know, with the entertainment. I used to dance. That's where the whole name came from. I used to dance, like really dance.
Really?
And do all that stuff, man. But
like as a part of your show?
Yeah.
Before
comedy? Yeah, before
comedy.
Yeah. I would just be in dance groups. I would dance to get into the club. You know, you'd just be like one of
you were a dancer.
Like a street dancer style.
Sure.
You know, like, yeah.
And that's how you got into the club?
Yeah, that's how you get into clubs, because you'd be one of the dancers. They'd let the dancers in so that the party looked like it's hot.
Oh, that was your job?
That was my move.
You were the shill. You were the dance shill.
the fluffer.
Yeah. That guy looks like he's having fun. Yeah, Let's go.
Everybody should go. He's obviously having a
dancer.
Great time. Yeah, man.
But you knew, like, early on that you wanted to be involved in the entertainment thing. So what'd you learn in film and broadcasting? Did you do shit?
Yeah, I did. I did a lot of cool stuff, though, in school. I had a TV show. We did, so I had a show that was kind of like Entertainment Tonight.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you just college stuff.
Yeah, sure.
Then we had a sketch show called Cape, you know, the city was Cape Girardeau, and we called it Cape Garage Door.
Uh-huh,
and it was we did it in the garage like that time.
Nice.
That's kind of dope. You know, homage to you.
Yeah.
And then I had a radio show. I had one of the earlier podcasts.
Oh, yeah. College radio show called. Earlier podcast.
But I used to get a lot of music from Europe, which was cool. Made me special. I knew these guys that were DJs in the city, and they would get me, like, new music.
So dance music from Europe?
Yeah, like all the cool stuff. So I would have stuff
like techno and shit?
Yeah, Kraftwerk and stuff like that before people.
That's right, we're the same age. Yeah. So yeah, Kraftwerk was
before people in the States got it. Uh-huh. And, even like Sade and stuff like that, people like hadn't even heard of it. And you're like, yo.
You're breaking artists.
Check this out.
Yeah, yeah. I got something.
Yeah, guys. The cool voice. Wait,
are we the same age? What are you, 50?
55, man.
Yeah, I'm 56, so it's about the same time.
Yeah.
That we grew up in the same time.
Yeah, man.
So you graduate college, and then you're doing, how long were you doing the dancing to get in clubs?
Well, that went for a while. I was like, so I graduate college, and then I started, you bouncing around, looking for jobs and stuff.
What kind of jobs,
I worked for Best Buy when they were new, new, selling small electronics, which means you didn't get a lot of money.
Yeah.
Just a little tape recorders. And,
oh, it was a commission thing?
Yeah, you get a little bass, but then your real money was in commissions. And so
and you got the blue vest.
You wouldn't be on TV. You had the vest, man, had the cool, welcome Best Buy.
What are you looking for today?
You know what? Those are great, but if you really want to get some, you need the dual responder.
Yeah. That one's a good starter, but you look like you're serious.
You look like a real serious guy about this.
Yeah.
And you could use a stand to put it on.
Oh, yeah, of course. These just came in.
Yeah, we got to have them. Interested in some headphones?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're just moving small pieces. That was it, the small electronics.
How long that last?
That lasted about, I don't know. I don't even think I worked there a full year. Maybe like in a little year. I had a bunch of odd jobs. Then I started working for this company, Modern Business Systems.
Huh.
They sold Rico fax machines from the Rico Corporation.
Right.
So
And
fax were new.
Exciting new technology.
Oh, man. And it was hot. I was popping off the... So you had the company car. You get to wear the shirt and tie to work. Yeah. You start feeling like a young executive.
Uh-huh.
Selling fax machines, getting a little cash. You know what I'm saying? Because I end up finding this kind of world where auto body shops could use it to go to to send stuff back and forth to the insurance companies. And when I got them to, and that became my niche.
Man. Oh, really? Yeah, and you figured that out yourself?
I figured that out. I stumbled up on it one day and it was like, boom, boom, boom.
So you were moving this shit.
I was slanging them jumps. I was the fax machine dope boy. I did it all wrong. Chains on, gold teeth, clothes. Everybody like, what are you doing? I'm selling these fax, son. Got pinched. Getting pinched. Looking too much like a dope boy.
Were you able to save some money on that?
I did. I saved a little dough, but then I ended up going to work for State Farm. I got a job at State Farm as a claims adjuster.
Ooh.
And that was cool, man. That was like another...
So that's where you go out to the accident?
Yeah, that's when you go and...
Look at the car,
you know, see the...
Meeting sad people?
Yeah, well, you know, you mainly kind of do it where the car's at the shop. You don't actually go to the accident.
When
the car's at the shop, you go and take a look at it and be like, all right, cool, boom, boom. You know.
We're going to need a whole new car.
Yeah, everybody wanted a new car. Everybody wanted their car totaled.
They total things now more than they used to.
Yeah.
Because things are cheaper and they're just like, fuck it.
Exactly.
Total.
It's like, total that shit.
But not then. Not back then.
Oh, no. You would have to get that joint fixed.
Yeah,
man.
Yeah.
But, you know, the big scam was people getting rental cars for their kids around prom time.
Yeah.
So it would be these little fakes. Super fake accidents where people would come in and be like, yo, I need to, you know, this has to go in the shop for 2 weeks.
Just to rent a
car? Yeah, I would love to. But, you know, because you get your rental insurance from your insurance. So they're paying for your rental car. And, you know,
and they're fixing the fake accident.
Fake accident for 2 weeks. Your kid shows up in the Cadillac or and whatever they renting,
and you saw that as a pattern that happened.
That was straight hustle. That was a hustle.
I would never think to do that. I can't afford a rental car, but if we fuck this car up, we'll get it.
We get a rental car for 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
We just put it.
It was a real thing. It was a scam.
Oh man, it was a scam, man. Just
so did you fix their cards? Did you fix their cars?
I knew what it was, man. You got to take care of the hood, man. You knew what it was, man. You was like, yo, got okay. you, dog. Like, yeah. Oh, so this her senior year? Oh, they got it, dude.
Yeah. The last prom.
Oh,
man.
That's cool. Prom, yeah. And my man on the honor roll? Oh, that's dope, man. Oh, that's no great. Doubt. Yeah. Yeah, go on, put it in the shop, man. It's cool. Y'all go and get a Cadillac, man. It's all good. Man.
Great. Good for you. Yeah, man. Helping out.
Yeah, that's it.
So, end of the day. And then how, where'd that lead you?
So then left there. I left State Farm to do comedy. When I left State Farm, I was doing comedy.
Well, what was that moment? Wait, I mean, when did you go do the thing? When did you first do the thing?
The thing, man, was it was kind of cool. It was like one of them, you know, in a way, it was one of those stories that people always kind of tell. But sure. It was another guy that did comedy, you know.
And at State Farm?
He was a friend of a friend of mine.
Is he still doing it?
Yeah. Percy Cruz the third. You know, Percy Cruz.
Yeah.
The second, or is he the third?
Is he still at it, though?
He's still at it, man. Yeah. He's still doing it, man. He's out there, and he does a lot of corporate gigs, a lot of cruise ships.
Isn't that funny when you get to our age and the guys that we knew who never broke out here, but they kept with it. That's always where it goes. Like, a lot of corporates doing the boats, doing whatever it got to do.
Staying busy, got a good life though. Good. I like it.
If you can stay on the boats and you can deal with the boats, you can do all right.
Yeah,
yeah.
So, but yeah, he signed me up. It was the Johnny Walker. Remember the Johnny Walker comedy?
I remember that.
It was like a big.
Yeah, it was big.
Big, and you would end up nationwide, yeah. Yeah. Like it would start local all around.
Right.
And then it would go in these big regions, and then the person would win and go on Carson.
Right. And really? It was Carson?
Yeah, it was Carson.
What year was that? Because I feel like I was already going by that point.
Yeah, you may have been, but it was like late, I'm going to go 80s? Early, late 80s. Yeah, late 80s, late early 90s.
Right, early 90s, I feel like,
late 80s, I think, for sure. Because I started in 87, 88, so it had to be super late.
I started
and
working
I was young.
Yeah, in 88.
So it might have been 88 because this was one. The first thing I ever did was the dude signed me up to be in the local version of that.
Without ever having done comedy?
No, yeah, exactly. But he used to like stuff that I would say and basically showed me how to do my show.
Huh.
He was like, yo, do that joke, do this right here, do that. And we put my set together. And he was like, I gotta be gone. I signed you up. You're not, you know, go up if you rock.
So this was an audition. The first time you get on stage to do stand up, it's an audition.
It's an audition.
Holy shit!
To be in the competition that night, right? This later thing. So you got to go and do 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And then they pick people. This is like in the daytime. Then they pick people, and they're gonna pick 10 people to come up that night to be featured.
Who were the judges? I can't remember.
It was local stuff. It was local because this was local.
St. Louis?
Yeah, it was all St. Louis at this time, like the level that I entered on.
Uh-huh.
It was only St. Louis comics. Then you would compete with guys from, you know, maybe somewhere in Illinois and then somewhere in Kentucky, just a small group.
So you made the cut?
That group. So I made that initial cut.
And then the second set was a competition set.
Yeah, so you broke. And I won. The first time I ever did, I won $500 that night.
That night after you did your first set, you did your second set, and you won $500.
Killed it.
Yeah. With 5 minutes.
Murdered.
No fear?
No, because I used to, like I said, when I was in college, I was in groups. I did plays.
So you lived on stage.
Yeah,
there was part of you that was ready to go.
Yeah, exactly. Was ready to go.
And then after then you just started doing stand-up?
Yeah, and then I just started to try to find to do it all the time. Like, that competition stopped because they went to... like the next round, and it was professional showed up.
Right.
So, like, these, you know, I was in the round with like all rookies and probably new guys.
Yeah.
And then the next round, pros showed up.
So they knocked you out.
Oh, what?
Yeah.
You realize, like,
who was it? You remember? Who came in?
Buzz Sumberland or something like that.
You know,
great names like that.
Yeah, those feature acts.
Yeah.
From the late 80s.
Dak.
Yeah.
Dak Wall.
There were some real guys from that time. I don't remember.
It was like a Buzz Sunderland. I remember that. And it was...
There was people like Chaz Elsner. Chaz was a guy. He used to be a clown.
Oh, that's hilarious.
But, all right, so you didn't make the big cut. So how do you start doing comedy in Missouri? Was there a club?
This was also right around the time of the resurgence of like all black comedy. So
it did happen like in the early 90s.
Yeah, late 80s.
Late 80s.
Yeah, so like Comedy Act Theater, like people like Robin Harris started doing. Yeah, they were doing clubs out
was
here.
Was he a Chicago guy?
Chicago guy.
Bay Kids.
And
did you know that guy?
I had a chance to meet him one time. He was the one that inspired me the most because his comedy was like a uncle, like a cousin.
Storytelling.
Like, yeah, it was like somebody you knew already. And when I saw that style, I was like, okay, yeah, I can do that.
That's
like,
what you
so he
do.
Became my guy. Like, and so I did get a chance to meet him one time in L.A. and then he died shortly after that.
Hey, young man.
Yeah, man.
So, all right. So, well, that's interesting because I don't know if I ever had a timeline on that where I guess it was because the sort of black comedy scene kind of coalesced. It sort of happened.
Yeah. You know, those things like.
What was the Playhouse place you talked about?
That was the Comedy Act Theater.
Yeah, where was that?
That was in the Leimert Park area.
In Missouri?
In L.A.
In L.A.
That was L.A.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so that was those places, and they had one in Atlanta.
Uh-huh.
And so those places started to pop around. And so this black comedy thing was happening. So people like in places like Missouri,
yeah.
I just would do one. So
Was it a produced show? Wasn't it every week kind of thing?
Every week.
Oh, every week.
Every
so
week.
They have it at a place.
Yeah, and I made a deal. This was me, young entrepreneur ideas. Had a nightclub.
Yeah.
Went to his slow night. Told him. Tuesday night, baby, come on.
Yeah.
I get the door, he get the bar.
Yeah.
He was like, all right. And he didn't believe that it was going to work.
Yeah.
And I packed that place the first week. And the second week, it was lines out the door. We had to do two shows.
Who were the acts?
It was guys.
Local guys?
It was local guys. Like, it was guys that were all, again, that wanted to do comedy locally.
And they got like 10 minutes, 15 minutes each?
Yeah, 10, 15. People just tried it. We had a couple of people that... You know, like you get lucky, like guys like Joe Torre was already doing comedy.
Yeah.
And if he came home, he would do it. His brother was young and emerging. So Guy Torre, so he had the name and you can throw it out there. Rodney Winfield, legend, old school. But he was big. He would only show up every now and then. But then there was a lot of little guys in there that was like all of us were trying to rock
the act again.
And it was enough comics. Like it was plenty to fill up a show.
So that was it. So you didn't even have to fuck with the mainstream comedy club circuit.
No. But where I started that night where I did that thing, that was at the Funny Bones, which was they were headquartered
right.
in St. Louis. So
yeah.
I did do that because right. I did so well that night.
So you moved it over there?
No. I would just go there when I could because they had more of a system, traditional system. And you got to do this kind of time. You got to set your jokes up. And the black comedy was different. Like it was just like, yo, just walk up and you start talking about somebody's outfit. You can just do whatever you want to, and build your set.
Sinbad style.
Yeah. And the more traditional comedy clubs was definitely joke punchline setup. You know, had
well,
a
you, yeah, you had to look like an act.
Yeah, the whole thing, all these
right.
things were
whereas, like,
rules.
You know, yeah, which is just like I think you could get away with it if it looked like an act. You know what I mean? It seems like if you're just riffing though to find shit and doing crowd work and stuff, you got more freedom. But yeah, when you get into a main, they're like, "What are you doing up there?" Especially if they don't get you. It's a weird thing because you could have an act and they might not get it just because of your style, and then they're going to accuse you of being, not professional.
Yeah,
that's true. Kind of fucked up.
No, that's so true.
Because I know a lot of dudes. Did you know those dudes that had a certain pace and it wasn't that quick and they weren't going to change gears, but eventually they got funny. But when they started, people were like, what the fuck is that guy doing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it was several guys like that. That was their kind of
Yeah, and they get funny.
Thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was this dude I used to love, this dude named Big Stan the Comic Man.
He was
Big Stan, he was tall.
Yeah.
But he was like different like that. His style was extremely funny because he just would walk up and be like, what's up, y'all?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go real slow. He'd do that. Yeah, yeah.
You ever just don't like your grandmother, man? You know, and he'd just be like, oh, it'd just be so funny, like the way he would.
It's like a slow build.
Do it, yeah. Like, and it'd be like,
yeah.
Like he want to say something, then he'll just step away from it, and then go back.
That's funny. What happened to that guy?
He passed. He got ill, like, some young dude that had like a kidney or liver or something.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah, man.
So, all right, so you're doing that, and then when do you start to do the bigger shows? I mean, how does it all happen? How does it unfold?
You know, it kind of unfolds in this weird way, like, you know, the death. So, you know, that comedy is happening, and, yeah. You know, things are kind of bubbling off, and I meet Steve Harvey, because, so what happens is I end up, like, I'm doing the local shows, and then I decide, like, I meet the guy that runs the Funny Bone. They had 22 clubs, and if you got booked by them, you can do them twice a year. So that was 44 dates.
Yeah.
And that's how I quit State Farm, when they booked me for those 44 dates.
Right.
And that was it. But it was the same time that black comedy was popping off now.
But those
now,
weren't black like, rooms. Those
no,
just
no,
they
were just
rooms.
Regular rooms. Yeah, but this was... This was me being able to take my savings and then be able to know that I had a base salary, right? So I'm not going to leave my job for nothing.
You're making that run twice a year.
I'm making it. I know I got dates. I got this amount of money on the books, and I'm just going to go for my passion.
But you don't have a family yet.
No. I'm just me. My mom, I had the house that I grew up in. My mom had remarried, and so I was living in the house I grew up in.
Yeah.
Cool. Had a car. Stuff, man. That trappings.
Driving the gigs.
Yeah, drove, man.
Yeah.
Driving, like all the way driving, like for real, like whatever, 15, 20, 30 hours, go get it.
Yeah, and those were like Wednesday through Sunday kind of gigs?
Yeah. Yeah, staying in the condo.
Yeah, yeah, the worst. Keeps getting worse every year you go back.
Right, the condo.
What's happened on this couch?
What was so great, because when you hear it in your mind, it sounds so amazing. Like, oh, guys,
condo.
Oh, we got a condo, guys. You're gonna stay in.
Yeah.
And you're thinking, oh, cool.
Well, you know what was always funny is that when a new club would open and they get the new condo and you get in there in the first couple months, you're like, this is fucking nice.
Yeah.
And then you go back a couple years later and you're like, ugh, what happened to it? Look what they did.
This is
look
wacky.
What the monsters did to this place.
But then it was always good if you went there with a big act and they don't stay there, so then you get
got
the big
both
room.
Rooms. Yeah, oh. yeah. Yeah, that was the best. I used to. It was always a drag to when you're featuring, like, and you got to stay with the big act, and then you got to, like, he's like, "Come on, we're gonna hang out." I'm like, "I don't even like you."
Yeah, man, dude, you're whack.
I'm not gonna learn anything from you by going to the mall with you.
I saw something about you. I was thinking about was one of my in that experience. Yeah. One of my big nights was opening for Sam Kinison one night on a Humbug.
Where at? In St. Louis?
In Des Moines.
Really?
Des Moines, Iowa.
At the club. So
like
before
funny,
he was
a
big?
Funny bone. He was emerged. He was like a big deal, but he wasn't, you
huge.
Know, doing, yeah.
He
so.
Wasn't doing Madison Square
right.
Garden.
So this is either he was going to write for Madison Square Garden or just, you know, like when guys just like go out on the road and just sell it out.
How was
real
that?
Quick.
Was it weird?
It was crazy, dog, because, you know, I'm a new guy. I'm in Des Moines. It's very much like... This St. Louis on steroids, like, you know what I mean? Like,
oh, you
yo,
mean in terms
like
of the
separation,
the
and,
weird white
right,
thing,
yeah. And then it's Sam Kinison, so you know his audience is like fucking,
just angry white people.
No, So I'm like the young opening act, like go up, and you know I got a good show, it's working, boom, boom. I don't have a lot of material yet,
right?
What do you do? 5 to 8 when you're the OBMC man, like
right? And then there's a feature. He probably brought Carl or somebody,
and so. He didn't even have his regular feature at that point because the feature goes up and panics.
Yeah.
Because I do good. The feature doesn't do well at all.
Oh, and that's the sweet spot.
Right.
If you can't do that 20 to 25.
So he comes off stage early.
Uh-oh.
The owner sends me back up. Sam's in the car fucked up.
Yeah, fucked up. Yeah.
And this dude is telling me to stretch.
Right.
And I'm new, man. I'm talking about
sweating,
shaking in my boots. Like I'm just don't.
You doing the audience work, crowd work?
Oh, you just trying that, then you know. And they were being patient with me for a while, and then it was like Sam.
Oh, really?
Sam, you know. And he's like, "Fuck, man." And I'm just going. I'm looking at the manager, like, "What you want me to do?"
Yeah.
I'm like, "Yo, guys, he'll be here any minute, you know, like, look at this lady. Like, what's that outfit you got on?" And then the manager telling you, "Don't do that. Don't do that type of shit." Okay, so now you can't do that. He's trying to come up with
new material, riffing.
All of a sudden, he walks in from the front of the club. Like, his partners are, like, just walking him to the fucking stage.
Oh, no.
He gets up there and turns into fucking Sam Kinison.
He kills it?
Oh, fucking just
like magic?
Like magic, dog. Like I'd never seen nothing. Like they was dragging this dude into the club.
Yeah, I know. That,
and he walked on stage and he's like, what's up, fuckers? Yeah. And boom, and next thing you know, hour,
killing
gone.
It. Wow.
You like, what the
kind
fuck
of a, it was kind
that?
Of a frightening electric event.
It was.
When
it
you
was,
saw when he's doing it,
he was a new dude. He was like, and then of course, you know, everybody like, you did good, man. You did good. You want to open for Sam? No, no.
That was not a great experience
not
for me
at all, bro.
Who else did you get to open for that kind of like that at least was inspirational? I mean, who were you looking up to?
At that time, it was, you know, Damon Wayans.
Oh, he was so good, man.
Damon Wayans, Tommy Davis. I got so Tommy Davis, he hosted an event that I was a part of, and it was great to
Where
be.
Was that?
That was in St. Louis. It was another, like, a comedy challenge thing. So, but he was just young. He was, you know, he was on Living Color, so he was famous. Like, we knew who he was.
Yeah.
But he was, so that was, like, special. And then he used to be a guy, St. Louis dude, local dude, Ron Ramey. He was dope.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What happened to that guy?
I think he passed recently, too. Like, I don't know exactly.
Oh, man.
But he never really got to the heights, but he was, like, super, he was the pro from St. Louis.
Right.
Like, the black dude that was the pro. That
right.
Had everybody like, yo.
Local hero.
You want to be like Ron Ramey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Was he one of those guys that was, like, a comic? Or just
not really. Like a lot of, he was kind of arrogant. Like people didn't really like him that much.
Yeah.
Like overall, like I don't remember. Like, but he was good.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You could not argue. Like, you like, oh, this dude good. Like,
yeah,
you
yeah.
know. But he was, you know, he had an arrogant. He was good looking. He had an arrogance about him that you know that was hard to like.
Good luck. Good looking
close.
Comics is tricky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't trust them.
Yeah. You can't. You can't. Saying? What are they up to?
Yeah,
isn't there
guys.
Something else they can do?
Yeah, why you gotta be? Why you gotta have charm too?
Yeah,
like, what's that all about?
Yeah, you know? Charm and good looks.
Yeah,
you're not
yeah,
a comic.
Yeah, yeah. Come on, get
Come
out
on,
of here.
Get out of here.
Go model some clothes or
exactly.
something.
Exactly. So
know.
When do you meet Steve?
So I meet Steve like at the second part of that first run. I'm out on that big run.
Oh,
Funny
Bones run.
Funny Bone run. Yeah.
Yeah,
I meet him in Dallas.
Yeah.
I get stuck. I get down there, Dallas Club. They go under new management. And they don't need me as opening act. I drove 10 hours down to Dallas.
To open for Steve?
To open for another. No, this
another
Steve.
Guy?
Steve's got his own thing going.
Yeah.
So he's got like a black comedy night happening somewhere.
Does he live in Dallas? Or
yeah,
he
he's
bring...
living there at the time. I guess, you know, it makes sense.
Radio
for
him, and shit?
He had a little light radio show going.
Yeah.
It was new.
Uh-huh.
He had a girl, you know, he was living down there. And I think, you know, of course, in the late 80s, Dallas was like this it town. To be in, like it was the economically strong,
yeah.
The basketball team was new, the football team was hot. Deion Sanders, them Dallas was like popping, like it was just dope city to be in. And so, Steve was living there and he was on the radio. And then he had a black comedy club, like called Vuku Rays. And I remember they told me they didn't need me at the Funny Bones and they're not gonna pay me. And the guy who set me up to do comedy. The guy who told me to be in the competition told me about Steve and kind of introduced us to each other through just word of mouth.
Yeah.
So when I went there, I told Steve, I'm the guy that Percy Cruz knows. And he was like, oh, yeah. And it just so happens his headliner act was bombing. He was like, this dude was bombing. He was like, you think you can go up and do a few minutes? I was like, yep. Went up, killed 5 minutes. So then I told him what my situation was. He said, let me talk to the owner. And then basically he said, just come back every night. This dude don't do well. I'm putting you up. And then at the end of it, we're going to see what we can throw. And they basically, I did that. Well, hope for this dude to bomb every night.
Yeah, and did he?
And then he gave me $250 and I was able to get home. And that was it. Then he brought me back as a headliner like 2 months later. So that was.
That worked out.
That was, that was my man. Then we went on to Infamy TV shows and the Kings of Comedy.
Isn't that crazy? So how long did that take? What was that process? How long were you out there headlining before, you know, whose idea was the Kings of Comedy? Because that was a big deal. Because that was a big sort of crossover big deal in a way, right?
Yeah, it was. I've been doing comedy for a while. You know, we were on the Steve Harvey show. I did some shit. I'd hosted BET's Comic View. I was I'd probably been on Def Comedy Jam twice. I'd been I'd made a little name for myself just with little splashes.
Was that whole Def Comedy Jam and Comic View, that all came up in the late 80s, early 90s? That all started to happen?
Yeah, yep, exactly. Yeah, both of those. They were both early 90s, I'm going to say.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I think, yeah.
And you did the Apollo, too.
Yeah, I did Apollo first. That was one of the first things. Actually, I did this other show called Uptown, but Apollo aired first.
Uh-huh.
And so I did, and when I did Apollo, you know, it was so intimidating, but I did well. And like you say, I never went back. I was like, I call it 1-0, baby. I got the standing ovation. I left like, okay, I'm out of there.
Is it a good experience? Did you feel like you just had, it was something you had, like a rite of passage?
Yeah, you had to do it.
It was not something you wanted to do twice?
No, well, I didn't at the time, but I've been back since, you know. And done things there. But at the time, I didn't want to take no chances on going back. Like it was, because it
you
was
did
scary.
Good
yeah,
did,
like, yeah, yeah it yeah. was like scary, man. Like New York is a tough, you know. When
and that's where they boo you? That's like when you go
light,
down?
Oh, they'll light you up like before.
Who was hosting when you were there? Showtime.
It seemed like it was Rick Avila, maybe.
Rick Avila's?
Yeah.
No Rick shit. I think that's right. Hey, yeah. Rick Avila's. Yeah, exactly. How you doing, man? How you doing? Yeah,
exactly. I think it was Rick Avila's.
I remember Rick Avila's. Junkie Pigeons.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I knew him pretty well.
He's from New York?
I started in L.A., but then I moved to New York. I was in New York 89 on and off through 95. So I knew Rick. You know, I knew his girlfriend. I knew, you know, I didn't know, you know, he did the, for years he was the guy in Ghost.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly,
and then
yeah.
and then he got sick, you know.
Yeah.
You know, the drugs, they do you in.
Do you in,
but
man.
It's like, that's a big time, that's a long time you were doing it before the original Kings of Comedy. I mean, if you're kicking around the early 90s, and that you don't do that tour until what, 99?
99. Yeah, we started
who put
in 99.
Who put you, I love Hughley.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
And
he is my guy too.
He's a great guy, and I saw his first HBO half hour, and I thought, like, that angry motherfucker. Look at that guy.
Yeah,
just fuming.
Yeah,
you know, and he's being funny.
Yeah,
but like I could see he was full of rage.
Yeah, so much. He's always so ready to let people have it.
Yeah, and I was like, that guy's great. And yeah, I finally got to interview him. He's a great guy. So it was you, Steve Harvey, Bernie.
Yeah,
and DL.
Yeah.
And that was it.
That was it.
So was that a tour before Spike decided to get involved?
For sure. We had toured, you know, this guy, Walter Lathan, he used to tour all of us individually. So back then—
He was your,
like
booking agent?
He was a
promoter?
Promoter, like a guy that does shows.
Yeah.
And he was the guy that has been successful, but he would— You know, it was all about theater shows at the while. So he would he could take Bernie out on a theater show and make money. He'd take Steve out on a theater show, he'd take me out, and he would take DL out.
So, it's so funny, because at that time, like all you do, especially Bernie, I mean, you didn't have any crossover audience.
No, it was all black audience. But when Def Comedy Jam blew up and Comic View, that little niche where that was the entertainment to happen.
Yeah.
It was all you needed to do. You can say anybody was coming to town, and all of us could sell out a 2,000 seat theater easy.
Wow!
Like that money was crazy back then. It was like so easy. It was not a lot of comics.
You go direct for if you showcase on any of those shows, it meant that you could sell.
You can sell.
Everybody's watching. You know,
everybody watching that show, and if
no
you were
shit.
Good, and if they put you on a package, so like it was a lot of package shows where it'd be four or five comics.
Yeah.
But on that small level, nobody had did it for an arena.
Yeah.
And that guy thought of that idea.
You guys.
Yeah. So he was like, nobody did like all the big guys at once and put it in an arena.
But you were already doing theaters and stuff.
Yeah, we would do theaters. I would go and do the Fox Theater or somewhere.
All black audience.
All black audience, packed.
Yeah.
You know, might even do two shows, you know, packed. Crazy.
So when you guys do the original Kings of Comedy... Like I don't know what the years are with that. So
it was 99 to like.
But was like, did Bernie have a show yet?
No.
So it was like still all black audience.
Yeah, Bernie was the king. Bernie was like, he had this most famous 8 minutes of comedy from his Def Comedy Jam set, the "I Ain't Scared of You" motherfuckers set. Yeah,
right.
Made him the
huge.
He was big. He was like Chappelle is now. Like he was like the comic.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that was it. Bernie, you say Bernie Mac coming, it's gone.
Yeah.
Chick is gone.
Powerful.
Yeah. So then.
How did Spike get involved? That must have been exciting.
Spike got involved because we were going to shoot the movie.
Yeah.
And then we were just trying to give the movie this splash, give it this identity again. And Walter, he thought of that idea. We all thought about doing the movie, but he thought of the idea of bringing somebody like Spike Lee in.
Yeah.
To make it a splash.
And he was into it?
And then Spike just, he saw us in New York. It was a big deal. We went to New York and he came, saw the show. He was like, he was in. So that was that. And, you know, he wanted to be able to make it like this cultural experience, which is what his kind of, you know, niche is. And I think that's why the movie still has legs to this day.
Right.
And the name, all of that, like all these things, like we never were able to capitalize on again, which was so unfortunate, but.
In what sense? Like you
well, we never did two. We never did, you know.
We
Yeah, but, you know.
You guys never toured again after
never
that together?
Never toured again, like crazy. Like it just, you know, just like a great, you know, band. Everybody severed
due to their own it's weird powers. Though, like, because you would think that, you would think now if you wanted to, well, I mean, you could probably get DL to go, right?
DL to go. I'm going to get ready to see DL after this. Like, we see each other all the time.
Right.
Like, DL to do it. Like,
right.
He just...
Steve won't do it.
Steve got, you know, Steve... He's the one. I'll try to convince Steven to do it. Now, he would do probably, like, if it would...
Two shows.
If we could, you know, get him to understand, like, it's a special, short-lived run...
Yeah.
He'd do it.
Yeah.
It'd take some maneuvering, but he'd do it.
And what do you think he could pull still? Like everybody get the people in?
Yeah.
Yeah,
that would work. You know, everybody goes, what do you do about the Bernie of it all, right? I don't think there's a replacement. You don't really.
Right.
Do you do it with the three? Do you do like a little video homage of Bernie? And do you do like try to find a new guy and say, well, who's that new guy? That's what everybody goes, who's the new king?
I guess that's what you think the expectation is.
And that's kind of what happens. It's like everybody who's hot enough to really do it and fit in, they got their own lane. Like, I'm doing my own thing.
That's right.
Man.
That's what happens. Everybody gets old and everyone's doing okay.
Yeah, exactly.
But the comedy thing, but. You still do it?
Yeah, man.
But acting, like, you turned out to be, you're a very good actor. You can do all
thank
the stuff.
You. Yeah, man, thank you.
You can do comedy, you can do the serious,
yeah.
you got an emotional range.
Yeah.
You do a lot of different shit.
Yeah.
And it's pretty great. Like, I mean, you were in that dark fucking movie. What was that? First Reformed.
Super.
I mean, that's like, did Paul Schrader direct it?
Yeah, wrote it, directed it.
Well, I know he's a trip.
Yeah,
and that movie's wild. But you know, you're almost like you're like the happy part of it.
Yeah, a bad movie.
Did you just audition for that?
You know, it was weird because Paul Schrader was looking for. He actually wanted Steve for that role. He wanted someone that he believed the black community would believe this person is that person, like right away.
Yeah.
And then
I thought you were believable.
Yeah. And I think that's, you know, that kind of authenticity where you believe, like, okay, if you say these things, I believe that you would really say that. And then as this kind of big, powerful black leader, I could believe you would also be that.
Yeah,
right. And so without it being jokey.
That was
the big thing he said when he spoke to me on the phone. He's like, you know, there's no comedy. I don't want you to bring any jokes. I was like, I got you, man.
I can do that.
Yeah, bro.
I can turn it off.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. But like, you did a lot of, like, there's so many fucking movies. The barbershop movies were huge.
Yeah.
And that Ice Cube produced those.
Yeah.
And he's in them.
Ice
those
Cube's
were fun.
Those were great.
Yeah, that was a great comedy showcase, right?
Yeah. Another one where, you know, it was an opportunity to shine. Do something creative because I wanted to play the old man. So that was like a wild choice, at the time. You know, I asked to play that old man. They was like, why you want to play the old man? I said, I know this old man.
Yeah.
Like, I know him. Like, I got him. And he was like, all right. Yeah. And I went in and I did it in a reed.
Yeah.
And he killed, and everybody was like, all right, cool.
And then, like, you were involved with the Honeymooners.
Yeah, produced that.
Now, how'd you get involved with that? And did it work out? How's that thing?
You know, that was one.
Because it, like, it's
one, that's one of those Hollywood tales that you go, like, you know, when everybody gets a bright idea and think, all right, cool, let's do the black version of this big white iconic show. And, you know, they was like, say it can pull it off. And I really believe that. One, I love Jackie Gleason. My grandmother was like one of, you know, she loved that whole Jackie Gleason variety show and just grew up on him back then. And so I love the idea of it. And when we first started it, that's the thing about doing any kind of movies. When we first started it, it was an executive who got me. We hired Mike Epps. So he got like what we were trying to do.
Yeah.
And we were breaking the movie out. And I was like, look, man, this the episode, if we're going to do this, we should do something that feels authentic so we could tell the story. Let's break out into a heightened version of the episode where the guy leaves the bus, the money on the bus and the briefcase.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
And then we can have this story that'll feel authentic to it being black because we can make it far more, you know, hyper into this new world and it'll feel real.
Right.
Loved it. Cool. He gets fired. So the movie's going. It's greenlit.
You know, which guy? The
producer, the big like head of the studio dude.
Yeah.
So he's our guy. Like when we first started, he's my guy. Now this is the first time I'm coming off like I'm coming off another movie. So this is my first time getting paid like a lot of money to be the lead dude. So
and
this,
you get a producer credit.
And it sets my quote, right?
Yeah, yeah,
so this is getting ready to be like, yo, I don't know, like $5 million or something.
Yeah.
Like, so, and if I do this movie, then I get this number from here on out.
Right, yeah.
So I got to do this movie.
Right.
So I'm not like going to walk away from it. So then the new guy comes in. He wants to put dogs in the movie. And he feels like it should be a lot more of a universal idea. So we.
That's just one, right there. That's that, one of those suggestions.
Yeah.
We need dogs. Yeah. Dogs are big now.
And you're trying and you're trying to fight it, and he's the new guy, and he needs to make his mark.
We need to put dogs.
And we're doing this dog, and we're doing dogs, guys. And then we're going to, and then they cut the budget, and we end up shooting a movie in Ireland. Like, so now we're doing Dublin for New York. I don't know what this, and the dog racing. So it's a dog racing. So
dog racing?
Greyhounds, dog. Like, people don't even know what this, like a part of the of American nostalgia that people are like, what is now,
what,
that?
What are the conversations on set? I can't imagine that Mike Epps is easy to deal with in this situation.
Oh man, he's like, you know, he's like a young comic being Mike Epps, all crazy. We in Ireland, I don't even know. I think he had to get some kind of special permit to even go, man. Like Mike Epps used to be a whole thing, man. Yeah. So
was that disaster.
Yeah. So you know, the movie, and then when the movie comes out, that guy's fired and a new executive is in charge by the time the movie comes out. So they just don't care about it at all.
Right.
So the movie actually is a good film in my opinion. It could have been a better film, but it just got lost in the minutia of what is it to, you know, to put a movie out in Hollywood. It's not like as simple as what people think.
Oh, of course not. It's a fucking disaster sometimes.
Yeah.
But then you did a lot of voice work, and you did. How do you choose movies at this? I never saw Cadillac Records.
Oh, it's awesome.
But it looks like it's great.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Because I love all the people that are you were Willie Dixon.
Yeah,
and it was great. Did you do a lot of research to do that?
Yeah, I did some research, learned how to play the, you know, the upright bass a little bit.
Because he was something else, that guy.
Yeah, he was pretty wild. Chess Records, and then and great actors, Jeffrey Wright, amazing in there. Most Def. Jeffrey Wright played Muddy Waters.
Holy shit, yeah, I got to watch that movie. I don't know how I missed it.
It's a great movie. It's a small film, but, you know, Adrian...
Brody?
Yeah, Adrian Brody, he plays the chess, the big chess...
One of the chess guys, Leonard.
And then Beyonce plays... at last.
Etta James. Oh, that's good.
So she plays Etta James.
And it came out
Mos Def plays Chuck Berry. Oh, kills. Dope.
Oh, I got to watch
that. Yeah, it's dope.
And what's this one that you directed? What's the one that you put together, the Dance Fu movie?
Dance Fu. So Dance Fu is my first time directing. It's a small movie, fun. You know, I was inspired by this kind of whole, like, Napoleon Dynamite was kind of popping off in all these quirky movies.
Kind of weird movie. Yeah.
Yeah, so the guy, Kel Mitchell, you know, he just was on Dancing with the Stars.
Yeah.
As, you know, Kenan and Kel fame. He had this idea. He came to us. We liked it. We kind of helped him beat the movie out, write it out, and just shot it, man, for like $200,000 or something like that. And so It's fun, man. It's a crazy, quirky movie about him as a kid who comes from Chicago to try to make it. His uncle, who's a big, like, kind of club owner out here, gets murdered and by this villain. And then
a villain.
It's like this dude, pretty eye Willie. He's got, like, pretty hair, and he wears makeup on one eye, and he wears a patch on the other eye.
Okay.
And it's just like, and he has to dance battle this guy to save, you know, the family and the legacy of his uncle's club. Is hilarious.
Oh, wild. So, yeah, wait, what? Now, when you do something like that, obviously you get some people to throw some money in, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But what were your expectations out of that? Did it meet your expectations?
I mean, probably not. I think because, you know, at the end, you know, like in all those kind of things, you didn't really, you know, you don't understand the whole process of, you know, kind of getting your distribution right before you go ahead, and you're expecting the movie to, you know, to do this or do that. And, you had some flaws. This was my first time directing. You had some flaws in the storytelling. You miss a few things, and you're like,
Learning experience.
We made a good movie, though. It's a movie that I love. My kids love it. It's one of them funny, weird. It's a good, bad movie. That's what you say. Good. Like, it's a bad movie, but it's good, though.
How many kids you got?
Three kids total. I got a daughter that's 30. Previous relationship. Lives in St. Louis with a little granddaughter that's 3.
Got a granddaughter?
Yeah, man. And then my oldest turned 16. My youngest. She turned 16 yesterday.
Uh-huh.
And then my son is 19. He's at University of Arizona.
Oh, that's a big school.
Yeah, big old school. Big old school. Yeah, he's enjoying it. He's having a good time.
Are they going to be in show business?
I don't know. He probably will be.
He likes to
animate and draw. He likes to act. So he's got a big personality, but you know. I think he'll probably find it as he goes along. Yeah. But he's a strong actor. He's done a few plays, and you know, I had him on my show a couple of times.
So. Oh yeah,
yeah, he's strong though.
You did like I didn't see the how did that run of American Buffalo do that you were in?
It was short lived. It was great though,
did
man.
Did you play Teach? Who'd you play?
I played Teach is the owner. Who owns the pot? Yeah, it's been something. I own the pawn shop. Yeah. And so, you know, it was great, man. And, you know, John Leguizamo, Haley Joel Osment.
Oh, yeah.
And it was...
And it was like a big push,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it got a big deal. And then the economic crisis happened. The
bank thing?
Yeah, the big fall happened, man. And
that was it.
And our big investor dude ran for the hills, and that was it. Like, we opened... We had a mixed review in the New York Times, and then it was short run, man. We didn't even, I think we ran maybe, we opened, and then we probably ran maybe four more weeks.
Oh, that was it?
It was tough.
Oh, man.
But it was a great experience for me, like, you know, because all my reviews were amazing. So okay.
Cedric surprises in this piece of theater that nobody else was good in. And what's your relationship with wrestling?
You know, that was coming up in St. Louis. It used to be a whole big thing back then called Wrestling with the Chase. And there was a version of a wrestling show that they used to do. And that was a big part of, like, our whole neighborhood. So when I was asked to be a part of the whole wrestling stuff, I was like, oh, hell yeah.
You like it?
Yeah.
You grew up with it?
Yeah,
you wrestle Chavo, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Because he's like, I'm on Glow, you know, and he's the trainer. Like, he's the guy that teaches all the chicks on my show to wrestle. He's the in-house wrestling coach.
Oh, that's funny.
I see him all the time. He's a great guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Comes from a wrestling family.
That's hilarious. Yeah. You grew up in a family of wrestlers.
Yeah, man. I mean, it's a family business. So what's the plan now? You're going to run this? Are you shooting other things now?
Yeah, well, I'm going to run this neighborhood thing for as long as it goes. We're doing great. And so that goes until March. And then,
you're shooting more now?
Yeah.
You're shooting second season.
You know, because this is network television, so we get 23.
23?
Yeah. Yeah, man.
So you're doing all right.
Yeah, man.
23, and you've been around as long as you've been around?
Man. I'm not. That's what I told somebody. I'm not. Hey, dude, I'm quiet over here.
Yeah, you're covered, man.
You're not hearing me complain about a thing. I'm like, I'm over here. At this stage of my career, I feel like I'm stealing money. I'm like, okay, cool.
That's great. Guys. And so that's pretty much it for now? No dates?
Yeah, no, I still do dates. I got a big run right after the holidays. So I did, like I said, I did Memphis last week. That was great. Then I just kind of chilled for Thanksgiving and my daughter's birthday this whole weekend. And then I'll do a big run right after Christmas. So 27th, 28th, 29th, 30th, 31st. So start in Detroit.
Yeah. Where do you play there?
Detroit, I do the soundboard at the casino, Motor City Casino. Great room. I love that room. That's a great room. Chicago, we're going to do. This is one of these big kind of shows with a lot of comics. DL and I, DL Hewley, a few other guys. A lot of great guys will be on these shows. It's usually about four comics on these shows. And we'll do like Chicago, Poly Pavilion or something. Don't know. And then Atlanta.
Where do you do there?
Atlanta, we'll do. This is probably another arena show, we'll probably be Phillips. Probably be Phillips Arena, and then we'll do because we're doing New Orleans, the Smoothie King.
Oh wow, and that's a hard market for a comic sometimes.
With New Orleans, but
you do good there.
Yeah, but and you go there with a group of people too. But we do pretty good in New Orleans. Yeah. And then it is a slower market, though, for sure. But they come out, though.
Yeah, yeah, good.
And then Houston for New Year's Eve.
Wow, you do the New Year's Eve show.
Yeah, man.
I just don't do them anymore.
I used to, I stopped for a couple of years, but, because it did get like a little dragging. But then it became this cool thing where I would, take my family and my kids, and then we would go do the New Year's Eve show and then take off and go somewhere.
Oh, so yeah,
it
was like,
it became our little thing. So you go like, all right, well, cool. You just get this big chunk of money, and then you go like, go into the new year with my family.
Is that what you're going to do?
But I got to be right back at work on the TV show on the 2nd this year.
Yeah.
So last year we did Houston and we went to Cabo and stayed at a friend's house. And this year we're just going to stay in Houston for a day.
Yeah.
And just kind of hang out.
It's all right, city. It's an okay city.
Yeah, it's all right. We got good friends there.
No, all right. It's cool. Well, it was great talking to you, man.
Yeah,
good
man. Appreciate this, brother. I know it's been a long time. We were trying to get this happen, but that's good. I appreciate your pay. You're one of the kings of this podcast thing, man.
Well, I think so. I think now it's, I don't know if I'm a king, but I'm certainly in an OG. I'm certainly one of the originals.
OG, I like it.
You know, like, I don't know if my kingship holds as much as it used to, but I'm definitely one of the guys that was there at the beginning.
Yeah, that's dope, man. Yeah. I mean, of course, everybody's trying to talk me into getting one, so I'm going to,
Your agent?
Yeah, no, just my business managers and people.
Why don't you they're recommending everybody.
It's important.
Just do it. It's important now.
It's important.
This
is where you get your audience.
Yeah, keep the brand going.
What you're talking. Yeah, you got to do it, man.
Man, they're telling everybody. There were podcasts before me and before most of the popular, but I was there. The timing was right. It was at the beginning of this new wave of the medium. But now, everybody... everyone's being recommended to do a podcast. If you got any kind of name value, go do one.
Yeah.
See what happens. Well, are you going to do it?
I don't know.
All right.
It's a lot of work. you make it look cool, man.
You can do it from your house, You could probably get set
You don't
up.
Do the cameras or anything either.
I don't. I don't. I just.
You got a classic old school.
It's audio, man.
Yeah,
nice. There was a reason for that.
And I love the tape, the 8-track reel that's rolling.
Yes, sir.
Recording.
Yeah, we got the reel to reel going.
Yeah, that's
awesome. You can look at those dials.
A lot of people don't see what's going on here.
Yeah, it's all analog.
Analog in here. It looks like we're in NASA.
Yes.
A Tom Hanks movie.
Big control board. We're both in our own booth.
You look great over there, and I love you. That's smooth.
In my chair with the joystick.
Your chair joystick. You look really cool like that. I like it. You're a little higher than me.
Yeah, well, I got to feel like I'm important.
Yeah,
thanks, man.
All right, brother.
That was Cedric the Entertainer talking to me right here. The show is The Neighborhoods on CBS Monday nights. And go to WTFpod.com/tour for all them dates. For all of them dates. Cleveland, Grand Rapids, Milwaukee, Orlando, Tampa, Portland, Maine, Providence, New Haven, Huntington, New York. There's the pre-sale starts on Wednesday morning at 10 a.m. wherever you are. And the password is Buster. Dig it. All right? Now I will play guitar for you like I do all the time. You don't have to make comments about my fucking guitar playing. You don't have to listen to it. This is the wrong tone. What am I responding to? What just happened, Mark? Let's go through it. Let's use the app. Why was Mark yelling as if somebody specific? Why was Mark making a general angry statement to everybody about not commenting on his guitar? What does that mean, app? That means one guy commented on Twitter about his guitar playing and didn't even at him. So the entire world is critical of my guitar playing. Fuck that guy. In this case, that means fuck that guy. All right. I'll talk to you later. Enjoy these three chords.
Boomer lives.